The following content may be distressing. Listener discretion is advised. If you need to, contact Lifeline on 13 11 14.
Emotional abuse. When I was in this type of relationship, I didn't have a name for the manipulative, controlling behaviour I was subjected to. I was too busy, completely consumed with pleasing a person who ultimately was happy being unhappy, to even have that time to reflect. I had no idea at the time that if I had just Googled emotional abuse, I would see so many uncanny similarities to what I thought was a unique relationship with someone that was very troubled. Knowing the signs can help save you from being unwittingly sucked into the perpetrator's trap, from being made to suffer due to their conscious or even subconscious need to punish you for their own unhappiness, as they cannot or will not figure out how to heal or fix their own brokenness. Reading about and understanding how they pull you into their trap, talking to professionals on my personal situation, and also people who too have suffered through the same manipulation at the hands of someone who they loved and thought loved them back, was the only way I found some sort of peace and acceptance. Rhonda Jansen was one of those people. She's an author, trainer, and presenter, penning Narcissism, The Evil Behind the Mask, and the follow-up book Reclaim Your Soul. Rhonda, one of your stories reminds me of when we first spoke. In Reclaim Your Soul, Tammy says, unless people have been involved with a malignant narcissist, they don't understand what I'm talking about. They think I'm exaggerating. It's the last thing you need. When you finally know the truth, you've mastered the courage to talk about it. But as you say in the book, awareness is a gift. It's something I want to pass on by doing this. You know firsthand what it's like to be with a narcissist. You were married to one and you guys were running a business together.
Yes, yes. And that's a really good point that you've mentioned there, because when people think of abuse, they immediately think of physical abuse. And I can understand why, because it is something we can actually see. But mental and emotional abuse is much worse, because people can't actually see it, which makes it easier for the person being the target of it to hide it, because they feel ashamed or embarrassed. And often it is harder for friends and family to actually pick up on it.
Yeah.
I actually, my story is at the end of 2012, I met my ex-husband at a function I was invited to down the Gold Coast, and I'll call him Bob. Like I said, at the time I was actually living down the Gold Coast and he was living on the Sunshine Coast. I was financially independent. I had a great circle of friends. I had a great sales job and I loved life and life was good.
You were a happy lady.
I was a happy lady. But, you know, certainly in true narcissistic form, Bob was very charming and charismatic and knew all the right things to say, which is...
And was drawn to that happiness because he lacks it.
Yes, they do. And that's exactly right. So I then, within 6 months, I moved to the Sunshine Coast because his office was up here. And I happily packed up my little unit, gave up my job and drove to the Sunshine Coast with my very shiny rose-coloured glasses on.
Yeah.
And I was so naive back then. I had never been touched or never experienced narcissism. So I really didn't know what I was in for, luckily, what the next 12 years was actually going to hold for me. We got married at the end of 2002. And soon after, I actually started working in our company, not realising at the time how important keeping my financial independence would end up being to me. He had just gained another piece of control, and that's one thing that narcissists thrive on and they have to have, is actually control over every area of our life.
Yeah.
Something that, like I said, ended up being a really important piece of control over me. In 2004, I had my first beautiful boy and my second son was born in 2007. He knew now that I would not leave, as my little family meant the world to me. That's, you know, keeping the family together is something that I stayed for. So as our company grew, so did Bob's thirst for power and control. And he always had to be right. No one could question his directions. And if they did, they got yelled down at and made an example of. And that was not just in our business. It was certainly in our marriage as well. And a narcissist's ego is absolutely huge, and they will walk over anyone to get what they want. And not only in a relationship are they the controller, we often see them in the business world. I'm not saying everyone that's at the top are narcissists, but often they step over people to get to the top.
And these narcissists, malignant narcissists, for example, someone like Kim Kardashian, who it's a vanity thing. Obviously, there's an ego there. People don't understand the difference. They think, oh, so he thought he was awesome. But can you explain to us exactly what type of narcissist we're talking about here? So we can tell from what you're saying that, you know, he's controlling everyone. But what is it behind him TikToking in his brain?
Control. It's all about control and getting what they want from people to get that control. So mm-hmm. It could be, and the bigger the company got, the more he needed that to feed his ego. Yeah. So people that have, and I deal with malignant narcissism, and like you said, people think narcissism, they think of Kim Kardashian.
Yeah.
But that's not what I'm talking about, the amount of selfies you talk. What I'm talking about with narcissists and specifically malignant narcissists, they actually have to control, and what I say, the red flags to look out for if you think you are in a relationship with someone or you work with someone, is they actually have to have control over everything. Especially you. If you're in a relationship with them, they have to have control or perceived control over you. Over time, they will isolate you from your family and friends. I don't know if you experienced that.
Yeah, I had to move. I had to quit my job because he couldn't get a job in the place that I was. And so if I cared about the relationship, that's what I would do. And then he denied it. And it was, you know, which is another thing that they do where they're like, that never happened. And it makes you feel like that you're crazy.
Yes.
So I had to give everything up. And then when I got there, it would make him extremely jealous that I was offered lots of jobs that he was never offered and, you know, that sort of thing.
And jealousy is a huge thing. I also too moved away from my friends, moved my job. Isolating you from your family and friends. You know, there was about a year and a half or 2 years that I didn't speak to my mum. My mum actually wasn't allowed in our house. Mm. And again, it was always called his house too. It was never our home or our house. It was his house. It was his house. I can remember too, in that whole 12 years, I could count on one hand the amount of times that I actually went out at night time with my girlfriends because he used to say to me, well, you can catch up with them during the day for a coffee. Why do you need to go out at night time? Which was interesting. Yeah. So it was so difficult to get him to look after the boys that I actually couldn't go out. It was just easier to stay at home and be submissive. And
this is very insidious too. It's not like overnight that you said, you know, I feel like being submissive to this person. They whittle slowly away at your self-esteem and they belittle you and all that sort of stuff. Talk to me about how you got to that stage where you realised, like, well, I'm no longer that super strong, confident girl I was on the Gold Coast.
And, you know, it always makes me laugh when people say to me, Rhonda, how did you actually let this happen to you?
Yeah.
And they'd look at me with pity in their eyes, or if they didn't say it, I could actually see that they were thinking of it. And it's not as though I woke up one day and I decided I was going to be the target. And like I said to you, I don't like the word victim because we're not victims. We are the target.
Yeah.
I decided I was going to be a target of someone that was going to control nearly every area of my life. I relate and I say to people that don't understand it, it's like when you put on weight. You know, all of a sudden we don't wake up one day, Emma, and go, oh, my God, I've put on 10 kilos.
Yeah.
It is slowly, because it's never happened to us, has it? It's never happened to us. It's little bit by little bit. Over time, we put on a little bit of weight, a little bit of weight until, you know, 6 months' time, 10 months' time, a year's time, we go, oh, my God, I've put on weight.
Mm.
And the same is with being in an abusive relationship or being with a narcissist. It's a little bit at a time, a little bit at a time that we start to notice that, you know, for me, I wasn't as happy as I used to be. I was depressed. I was lost. I thought, where did I go? I didn't recognise the person that I'd become anymore.
So working with this person, owning a business, you're financially locked in, you have children, you're watching people in your company or people that you were working with lose money and all sorts of horrendous things because of this person enjoying ruining other people's lives, I guess, for the most part.
Yes. I actually saw that happen a lot over the 12 years and I saw what he would do to people. But when it came towards the end, it was a lot of putting me down. I never thought he'd treat me the same way as badly as he treated them, but he actually treated me worse. Mm. Over time, if I ever succeeded at doing a presentation or got a good sale, he'd say, the only reason you got that was because of me. Narcissists are also, because of their ego, usually have affairs. They usually have affairs, and I would often question his actions or where he was going. And he would say to me, oh, you're so jealous, you're insane, you're just insane. But I ended up, at the end of the day, finding out that he was, and my awareness was right. And it's one thing that they do and they're very, very good at is turning a situation around.
Yes.
To say they're really good at manipulating and turning the situation to make it our fault and it's not. Or making out that, I was told I was insane, I was crazy. When I eventually did leave, my self-esteem was in the gutter. It was non-existent. Non-existent. Because I started to think that I was crazy. I was.
How did you get to that? For myself, someone told me, you're in an emotionally abusive relationship. And I went, what? And then I Googled it. How did you get to that epiphany moment?
It wasn't actually until I left. I planned for a long time to leave and I had left a few times and kept going back. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a very common thing as well. I don't think you wake up one day and say, that's it, I'm walking out the door. For me, it was a gradual thing over time. I knew that one day I'd actually get the strength to leave. I stayed for my boys, thinking that I was doing the right thing, but they were the reason that I eventually left because he was starting to threaten to get physical. And it was at the end of 2012, in November 2012, my dad was killed out riding his push bike.
Oh, gosh.
And out exercising and he's gone. And a few weeks later, it was early December, and I was putting up the Christmas tree and Christmas decorations, and the boys were only 5 and 8 at the time. And they're by my feet playing with the empty boxes and the decorations. And I can remember thinking, I can't go through another year living like this. I can't. Because I could be out riding my push bike and be dead tomorrow. I thought, I can't do this. So it wasn't until I actually left Christmas Day, I was threatened with a knife and I thought, I can't do this. So at the end of 2012, I left and I can remember the feeling as if a huge weight had come off my shoulders, just this amount of freedom because I knew there and then I wasn't going back.
A lot of people are like that where they know, like I knew something was wrong. But I was, as I had said at the beginning, so consumed with looking after this person and believing the BS where he'd say, you know, I swear I'll never do it again. Yes. Never, I promise. And it would just get worse and worse and more crazy. And this look, it's just extremely uncomfortable to be with him if you had any success or any accolade or you dared to have any self-esteem or pride in what you were doing. It was just terrible.
and they hate it and they'll squash you down. They cannot have anyone be more successful than them. They'll squash it down. A person that's confident, because narcissists actually have very, very low self-esteem. They'll come across as they're a confident person, but in reality, they've got very, very low self-esteem. Mm. Because if someone's confident, they'll be happy for your successes. They want to lift you up. They want you to succeed. But to answer your question, I actually never knew I was in a relationship with a narcissist or married and in business with one until I actually left. Mm. And I had three people at different occasions say to me, oh, well, you know, he's a narcissist. I had never heard of the word. I didn't know how to spell the word, let alone what it meant. And I Googled like crazy. I read books. And then I realised, I was. I actually wasn't insane. I was actually the target over time of somebody that was a narcissist. And that's what led me on the path of writing my first book and now writing my second book. So
your first book talks about what we've just spoken about, how you came to this this horrible relationship. But in the second book, it's something that I really like. You talk about thriving versus surviving, which is probably, I guess, the best way to lead into the how you look after yourself, how you get to the point of peace. Thriving is what you're doing. Surviving is what he and other malignant narcissists are doing because of their past, you know, whatever it is that is a childhood trauma or whatever that has conditioned them into this behaviour. Talk to us now about how you looked after yourself. You came to this point where, you know, you realise you've left. How did you start to heal and what did you do to help yourself?
The first year was really, really hard. I was just trying to breathe. I was just trying to get out of bed every day and breathe. Mm. Like many people that you leave an abusive relationship, there were days that I didn't want to wake up. Yeah. I just thought if I don't wake up the next day, it'll all be fixed. But because of my boys, they kept me going and I wanted, you know, they gave me purpose and a reason and they're my why and they're still my why. And, you know, we talked about having a why before.
Yeah.
But it actually took time because it took us 3.5 years to do a property settlement, 2.5 years to get children court orders done. And that's another whole story in itself.
Yes.
But what I eventually had learned is that we all have triggers. Hmm. We all have triggers. And relationships can actually bring out the rawness in all of us. So, and not just a relationship with our friends, but an intimate relationship with our partner or our husband or wife can bring out rawness in us. And it's all got to do with the way we're wired. And I realised that I had to go back and look at my conditioning as a young child. And a lot of people say to me, Rhonda, you know, you're a smart lady. How could you let this happen to you?
They think only stupid people would be put into this situation, which is absolutely not true. They thrive on that. It's empathetic people are what they're really looking at, and people that would go above and beyond, put them first over themselves.
Yes, which is what you do. You look after your other partner. But for me, it was going back in time and thinking, okay, well, what? Because, you know, it affects really smart people, get affected by narcissists. You can have really high IQ. You can be really smart. It doesn't matter what kind of personality trait you have. They target a lot of people. So for me, it was going back and looking at my triggers and what was my, how was I wired from a young age? And my mum and dad used to have massive fights, and my dad had a temper. You know, I love him dearly, but my dad had a temper, and my mum would cower. So whenever he raised his voice, she would cower. And I learnt from a very young age is that if someone raises their voices and yells, just lay low. Just don't upset the apple cart. Just keep the peace.
Yeah.
Just keep the peace. And even though I know that swearing and yelling, I know that intellectually I understand that. Hmm. But subconsciously we still do things without realising how much it's from our conditioning from our past.
Yeah. You, in your second book, talk about voodooing, which was a very interesting concept where all these things are conditioning to bring you to that point of what you've just said then, acceptance of something that you know logically isn't right, but you fall back into that, I guess, behaviour or reaction to a behaviour because of conditioning.
Our past conditioning, yeah. And I do call it voodoo because people think, oh, we're not voodooed here in the Western civilization, but we actually are more than we realise. And I once heard that we're all actually wounded children walking around in adult bodies. So when you heal the child, the adult will appear. And I say to people too, so when we look at our triggers, what is it? You know, really sit down, and I talk about it in my second book, really sit down and look at, this is the person I am. What is it from my past that I still believe to be true for me? What is that?
Yeah.
So intellectually, you know that that's actually not true, but we still are conditioned more than we realise, and we act today on something based on our past that is so, and it's not until, and you talked about post-traumatic growth, it's not until that we are right down that we go, okay, we're going to get back up. I say to people too, we can't, I always say those people played a role in our life that they were meant to play. And it would be tragic if we didn't learn from it. It would be tragic if we just kept surviving and not thriving. You know, and thank them, you know, and even though some days it's really hard to thank them, people say to me, Rhonda, do we have to forgive them? That's an individual thing. I don't forgive, but I have learnt from it. I forgive myself. And that's the most important person I think I have to forgive, is I forgive myself. Because so many people, like the story you shared and my story and everyone's stories, is we get embarrassed. How could I have let this happen to me? Well, you know what? It's happened. It's happened. We need to forgive ourselves. Do we need to forgive them? That's an individual thing.
Yeah. So talking about what is your why and then moving forward from that, it's not a, you know, like, well, grab your book or, you know, like Google some stuff and go for a little walk and hang out with our girlfriends and next weekend we'll be tip top. These things take time, especially when you have children, and sometimes you can't completely remove yourself from the situation. I was fortunate enough not to have children, not to be married, and could actually pick up and move myself thousands of kilometres away from that individual. So for the most part, I'm okay, but not everybody is, I guess, let's use the word fortunate enough to have that sort of situation. How do you keep yourself, that was a good question that someone had said to me. How do you protect your mental health after being exposed to the emotional abuse for years? How do you prepare yourself mentally even to get out? What would be your advice to that person knowing, for myself, we had broken up about four times, and the third time I was happy to leave and I was getting ready to leave, and he saw that and he crawled back crying. He's like, I swear I will never do it again. I love you. You are the most important thing to me. I've never cared about anyone, blah, 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 blah. And I was so weak and I was so exhausted. I'm like, and I wanted to believe it. And I knew that this person was damaged, but that in my head, I said to myself, this is the last time. You must be ready next time if it happens. And then it did, and then I moved forward from there. What sort of advice would you give people that know how to gain that strength, how to ready yourself, prepare yourself, because they're going to throw all sorts of BS at you?
You know, you've actually got two questions there, Emma, that are really, really good, really good questions. So I'm going to answer them separately. One was our why. How do we keep ourselves mentally strong to be able to deal with that? The other one too is, you mentioned that which is really, really common, like I said, I left numerous times and kept going back. But you know, how do we, so I'm going to talk about that, is people often say, Rhonda, why do we go back? Why do we go back? And there's different reasons we go back. It's just we think to ourselves, look, I'll try harder. I'll just try harder this time.
Yeah,
it must be me. I'll try harder. They're right. They must be right. I'm the one with the problems. They said they're sorry. And that's one that I hear a lot. They said they're sorry, and I really think they mean it this time. I really think they mean it this time. And the thing that's connected to that as well is we actually think that we can help them, because like you said, we're actually good people. You know, we're actually good people, and we want to see the good in people.
Yeah.
And you want to see the good in people, and you want to believe and hope. We want to hope that that's true. So we actually believe that we can help them. So that's why we go back. But then there's a point that we go, no, there's no more. There's a line in the sand and there's no more. So how do we keep ourselves mentally strong? Because anyone that's actually come out of it, is their self-esteem is in the gutter. And like I said, it's just emotionally and mentally, is how do we get up every day? How do we cope? How do we go through it? I always say, have your why. For me, it was my boys, and it's still my biggest why. I've remarried and have an absolutely amazing husband. I was very clear on what I wanted this time around, and I am blessed to have an amazing, amazing husband. But I say to people, which is really interesting, when I do workshops, I say to women, and it's mainly women that come along, there are men that are victims or targets as well, I should say. But I want you to say five amazing things about yourself. And you know what I find interesting with some women? Is they struggle to find one good thing. And that is because they've been told for so long that there's nothing good about them. Keep telling yourself mentally, what's five amazing things about me? What's five amazing things about me? And I don't, you know, you don't have to be a rock star or, you know,
my album just went platinum.
Yeah, my album, that's exactly right.
Oh, you know, my God.
Five amazing things about you. Also, mentally, it's a known fact that music is good for our brains. Music is good for our brains. I say to people, whenever you're feeling down or whether you're being challenged because you've got a shitty email from them or a text message, do a playlist of songs that you can actually, that make you want to get up and sing and pretend you're Beyonce, who I love, or, you know, dance. Do a playlist or go for a walk. Exercise is another one. Is go, you know, it doesn't have to be a long walk. Just walk around the house or walk around the block, is, and keep doing that and set little goals. And I'm not, because mentally it's really important, and I'm not saying, you know, you're going to run the half marathon. That's, you know, run the half marathon. Little things like, I'm actually going to get up 20 minutes earlier tomorrow and go for a walk, or I'm going to, you know, that book I've been wanting to read, I'm going to allocate 15 minutes every day
to read
is, and over time we build that strength.
Another great thing that you've talked about in your book, which makes a lot of sense, that once you've come to, I guess, my point where I'm at acceptance, I wouldn't say that I'm 100% healed because it hasn't been a long enough time, but a flight safety demonstration, use that simile of managing yourself after enduring emotional abuse. Talk to us about that. I think that's very clever. We sit there every time we get on a plane and half listen or completely listen.
Yes.
Supposed to completely listen, but it's the same old thing every time. But it does make sense, because after you are rid of a narcissist, if you're lucky enough, like myself, where you can completely remove them from your day-to-day life and don't have to have any sort of interaction because of children and all that sort of stuff, I liked that it's something to keep yourself in check, I guess, and to realise that a lot of, once the narcissists have left, you're exposed, you'll see all these red flags in people that you work with, friends, and you'll hear little stories of things that you would have found at the time that you know didn't think was such a big deal in your relationship, and then then you'll hear blah, blah. You overhear them saying, oh, but my child, blah, 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 blah. And you're like, oh, that's actually not the right thing to do. That's not fair on your child. You're using your child as bait against your ex-partner, you know, that sort of thing.
Which they do. They do use children in the porn of it. One thing, and like you said, you get on the plane and the amount of times you travel and you're thinking, you know, you're courteous and, you know, you look at them but your thoughts are elsewhere and you pretend that you're listening to them, is that put our oxygen masks on first. And then again, this is to do with our building our mental and emotional strength. Back up is we have to put our own oxygen mask on first before we can help
on anybody else,
on others. But, you know, and also too is that having a network of at least five people around you as a support person, because we aren't, as human beings, aren't meant to be on our own. Otherwise, we'd still be living in caves. You know, we are meant to live in tribes and groups and have people to support us. Have five people that you can call on, and they can remind you of five amazing things about yourself if you can't remember or can't think of any.
And the right people too, because I had discovered that it's difficult when people know your previous situation, then ask why, you know, why did you leave? Why, you know, all that sort of stuff. Oh, what happened? And you're at that stage where you are comfortable enough telling the truth, but these people have in a good way, they have no idea how to deal with what has just been said to them. And as we discussed at the very beginning, what Tammy said, that she feels like everyone thinks you're exaggerating and it can't be that bad. It's also about maybe not surrounding yourself by other people that were targeted, instead of using the word victim, by these sort of perpetrators, because then you're just like sort of swimming down some sort of terrible hole. So there's like Facebook pages where, you know, emotional abuse support network, blah, 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 and you read these terrible stories of people that are at all various stages of realizing / they have realized but they can't leave, or they're feeling suicidal and all this sort of stuff. That's, to a degree, not going to help you.
I agree. Get off them. I say to people, because people sometimes like to be the victim and dwell
on the dwelling longer than they should. Dwelling.
And no, just, you know, educate yourself, but then, okay, what do I need to get out of this state? What do I need? And be aware of, like you said, the red flags to look out for, but get off those sites. Like, get off them. And block some people too. You know, there's some people that, you know, when I first left, I cut off so many people's social media. I just needed to keep my little group very small and very safe.
So I guess it's about finding your anchor too, something that will ground you.
Yes.
Something that even sometimes it's not even a person or someone that will talk back to you, something where you can have your own moment to yourself, just to steady yourself, so whatever that might be.
Sorry, Emma, a lot of people can't do that, and I think it's really important. I know some people that can then go straight into another relationship or have all these relationships. It's a good time to just have time out and know, you know, just, okay, I just need time out. I just need to get myself right. And the only thing that can fix that is time. And people say too, Rhonda, how long is it going to be until I feel better or I heal? We're all individuals. You know, only time can fix it, and that's only time.
Yeah. Would you have any advice for people once they've come to this stage of, I guess, realization, and they are moving through time, they're getting there, just to keep themselves in check? What would you suggest to, you know, like you said, when you get that shitty text message from them, or you go on social media, you might work, you know, in the same sort of network or whatever, you know, or live down the street from him, and you drive past blah and you see, you know, something that he's doing and it triggers you. How do you, what sort of suggestions, because there's only so much blocking out, I guess, that you can do on your situation. You might have children with him or her or whatever.
And that's right. And especially if you have got children, that's easier. You know, you do have to have some form of contact.
Yeah.
And I always say to people, it's okay to feel angry. It's okay to want to smack them on the chops, you know, not that you can, but it's okay to get angry. It's okay, because that's what makes us human beings, is the up and down emotions and happiness and sadness and anger and peace, but not all the time. So again, I say to people, put a strategy in place beforehand. Like when we're feeling calm, is put a strategy in place. So if you do get an email and you do have to respond, ask yourself, do I have to respond straight away? And usually it's no. And make an agreement with yourself up front. I'm going to respond in an hour's time, in 5 hours' time, or I'm going to respond tomorrow. But sometimes you don't have to respond at all. And so with regards to that, do I need to respond? It's okay to get angry, but not all the time. And the other one that you talked about is one thing I've learned too, no one can make me feel angry unless I allow them to make me feel angry. Because if I looked at Bob and he still made me angry, then I'm giving him that power and I won't give him that power.
And that's what they need. That's what they're thriving on. That's the one thing that you can take away from that narcissist, genuinely not. And that's a good thing that I'm at. Like, you know, that only took, you know, once I realized, I'm like, I do not want anything to do with you ever again. And I'm not just saying that. And I 100% do not care if that person lives or dies. It's irrelevant to me. So my only issue is looking after myself and expressing to other people what this is about. So if I can, like, just stop one guy or girl from getting to the level that I was at, or that you were at, or Carrie in episode one of this podcast series was at, then I've done a good thing.
I agree. And I'm actually really grateful for certainly not when I left and for the first couple of years, but I'm really actually grateful because I actually am a corporate trainer, and it's also, and I still am a corporate trainer, but it actually put me on the path of publishing my two books and talking to men and women. And it's actually put me on this path of more awareness and actually being able to incorporate that into a work environment, because these people are toxic and in work environments as well. So I'm really grateful that I've got a whole level of education now that I didn't see myself on this path, say, you know, 14 years ago. So, they can only allow us to get angry if we allow them to.
Absolutely. And another good thing that was in your book, that was a man that was climbing one of those treacherous mountains, and he said at the beginning, which was really great, and if you're in the situation now where you're trying to leave this relationship, you know, and like we said, you bounce back and forth, you try and leave, and you stay, blah, blah, blah. If you're at that point, this was really interesting because the man that was, I guess, chaperoning the people up the mountain, he had said at the beginning, who are you willing to die for? Like, honestly, who is that person that you would, and they say, oh, my children, maybe my partner, you know, like, whatever. And then they climbed up the mountain, and the story that you tell is that one of the people on there got quite weak with the altitude sickness, and so they obviously babied this person and did their very best, had them go first down some treacherous, you know, ladders and all that sort of stuff. And this person fell down, which is, you know, terrible. And so they've gone down to check on him, make sure he's okay, and they've seen that one of his bones is actually sticking through his body and he's not okay. They're in the middle of the snow. Gosh knows what the temperature is. It's already bad enough as it is if your body is 100% healthy and able.
Yes.
And then the people there had said, gosh, well, we can't leave him. And then the chaperone brought everyone back to reality and said, you never said you were going to die for this person, because inadvertently this is probably what's going to happen if we then lug them back up, you know, the ravine or whatever it was that they fell down, and then continue down that path, you inadvertently will die. And the only reason why they didn't think that he was a total jerk for saying that is when they got home, hugged their kids at the airport and realized, gosh, I lived, you know, and it could have been, I maybe never would have got to hug my family.
And I'm glad you brought that story up, because I say, I do mention that story in my second book, Reclaim Your Soul, is that who are you prepared to give up living your life for? And it's a really important question to ask ourselves, because no one, you know, I'm not prepared anymore to give up my life for anyone. You know, we're here for a journey, and that's what it's.
Exactly. Yeah, if you're at that point, think of that. Are you ready to give up your life for this person? Because that's what you're doing.
Yes.
Right now.
With hindsight, yes.
So with hope, and there always, hope is the key to success, having that hope, knowing that you can have a better life when you've removed this person.
And guaranteed, whenever we leave a toxic relationship or a narcissist and we're getting mentally and emotionally abused, whenever we let go and we become aware of it and we learn the skills to deal with it, our life, everyone's life that I've spoken to, 100% is better. They start achieving what they're meant to achieve. They start doing great things. They start being happier. Their life is 100% better, 100% better.
And you won't necessarily fall back into that trap. You just need to keep yourself in check and use those whys and learn from your mistakes. That's the key.
Yes. It's what we do next that actually matters. Mm-hmm. So once we have left and we've decided we're not going back and we start building our mental and emotional strength, it's actually what we do next that matters. It is what we do tomorrow when our feet hit the ground. It's actually what we tell ourselves on a daily basis. It is what we hunger for and what makes us come alive. It is knowing that we are loved and actually seeing the love in the eyes of our children or our partner that actually truly matters. Mm. And that is what, that's actually really what matters. So empowering ourselves and no longer cowering is what I say. Yeah. So we're empowering ourselves and we will no longer be cowering and we're going to become the person we were born to be. And as time goes by, you will think, wow, look, I actually survived that. I can do anything. And you know what? You absolutely can.
Literally can. Another great thing that you guys talked about was your 10-year-old self and you, all those hopes and dreams that you had, and now you've basically thrown them all down the toilet because you're pleasing this person that fundamentally does not, cannot be pleased.
Yes.
Because they've got their own issues. And that's not your story. There's a much better phrase that you used in your book, but it's that's got nothing to do with you. That's their baggage or their problem. Your dreams and your hopes and all that sort of stuff, you're more than entitled to go for.
And with the right person, we do. Because narcissism, even though they'll say that we're actually sick, narcissism is actually a known mental disorder. So they'll actually, which is quite funny, ironically, is, you know, that we're mentally insane or we're crazy, but it's actually a known mental disorder. So quite interesting, isn't it? Quite interesting.
That was episode 2 of the first series of Emotional Abuse, A Conversation, chatting with Rhonda Jansen, author, trainer and presenter penning Narcissism, The Evil Behind the Mask, and her follow-up book, Reclaim Your Soul. Series 1 discusses emotional abuse in romantic relationships. To hear the rest of this series and series 2, which delves into emotional abuse when it comes from family members, Google Emotional Abuse, A Conversation, or check out both series on iTunes.